And we seem to have a long evening ahead of us. So maybe it will be best if we start. I'd like to welcome colleagues, chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, Abu Magaka, members of SCOPA, members of the PC, minister and your team, National Treasury. I'm not sure if the Minister of Finance is here or who from National Treasury is here. So can the support indicate to us just to check whether members are all in and all fine and if we are good to go, so that we can manage our time. We'll request that we, when speaking, we turn our cameras. I'm advised by parliamentary sound and visual that they are streaming all these, our meetings rather, on the platforms, and they would like us to turn on our cameras when speaking. May I just reiterate, colleagues, that we turn off our mics, mute our mics, so that we don't have interruptions. I think we are all au fait now with this system. Can we not have our interruptions as the meeting is going on? So I would like that we start and just check, colleagues, are you all fine? Is everybody here? Right. I'm going to assume silence is agreement, and then proceed with the meeting. Colleagues,
Peggy Hadebe from SCOPA present.
Okay, Honourable Hadebe, then that's fine. With that enthusiasm, let's get going. Honourable Chairperson Bab Magaka, we are meeting here because there are matters insofar as SAA which have over time become the purview of both the PC and ourselves for a host of reasons, but primarily, of course, the entity continues to be reporting to yourselves. We were scheduled to have met some 2 weeks ago, but there was a request that under the circumstances of the need for further engagements and discussions insofar as finances obviously are concerned, that we give a bit of latitude, and that is why we are meeting today and under these circumstances. SAA, of course, as we know, is under a business rescue process, and when we last met, there were quite a number of issues that we had raised, and I must say, Minister, that it did not sit well with us that the responses to questions have not been forthcoming. We've got a long list of about 18 items which needed responses. We have not received those on our part, but I did see that some correspondence has come through which may touch on some of those salient points. Ultimately, the issue is about how SAA is going to move forward. And we therefore are being briefed today on those matters. I heard the Minister of Finance in the House saying this is not a bailout, and so we are going to be taken on board as then what is this 10.5 billion rands and where we are headed insofar as the business rescue process is concerned. Colleagues, Ubab Magaka will present a question and answer session and is going to outline the process we're going to follow so we can get maximum responses to our questions as well. So I think without any further ado, with that background, that this is a follow-up meeting on SAA matters, which has remained on our radar for the longest of time. And of course, there have been a number of developments at SAA, which amongst others necessitated or triggered the need for funding, which was announced in the MTBS will now be made available. And so let us rather hear then from SAA itself and the minister. My colleagues from SCOPA will please, you'll indicate as per normal in the group so that we as to want to proceed. So Minister, I'll hand over to you to then introduce to us who is accompanying you today so that we know who we are talking to. And I assume my apologies for your members, just like us, will be entered into the record, and there's no need for us to have them read out now. The support staff for both committees should be in receipt of those. So if I may then hand over to Minister Godane, the Minister of Public Enterprises, who is the shoulder representative, and will then indicate to us who from the board is here. I mean, from SAA, we was also noting that there is a report that the chairperson of the board has resigned. So we would want to get an update in so far as what structure currently presides over the entity and in what form that structure is. So Minister, with those words, colleagues, welcome. Let's hand over to SAA and the Department of Public Enterprises.
Good evening, Chair. They're both the chairs of SCOPA and the Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee. Good evening to the members of Parliament, and good evening to all the others from the public domain who have joined this meeting. Before I get down to introducing the business rescue practitioners, let me make some introductory remarks, Chair. The first of which is to say that, as you correctly pointed out, SAA is under business rescue from the 6th of December 2019 until now. And we will indicate to you as we go forward what the different phases of this process have been and will be as we traverse this journey. The second point, Chairperson, is to restate that in the view of government, not any particular individual, there has been the intention to restructure or intervene in as many SOEs as possible, particularly from the beginning of 2018, in order to make sure, as the President has stated on numerous occasions, particularly in the State of the Nation addresses, that part of the state capture process was to, in fact, take control of boards, management, procurement processes, treasury functions, and other processes within key commercial SOEs such as Eskom, Transnet, SAA, Danel, PRASA, and many others. And that this has led to a fairly destructive process, which is now unfolding before the Zondo Commission. And as we meet today, you know that over the last few days, SAA has been in the focus again in the Commission in terms of the various role players who have contributed in one way or another to what we already are in a devastating set of difficulties in terms of the mismanagement of SAA over a period of time. So even before the business rescue process started in December 2019, there were government decisions which required the Department of Public Enterprises as the shareholder representative to start the process of restructuring SAA. But why is it important to talk of restructuring on the one hand, and then eventually what happened on the 6th of December when SAA was placed in business rescue on the other hand? It happens in a context where it is still the belief of government that SAA in its new form has an important role to play in the aviation space, both in South Africa and on the African continent, that the kind of capabilities that SAA offered, even in its business rescue stage, in terms of repatriation, trade links, and the cargo links that were necessary during the height of the level 5 lockdown or shutdown, proved that that kind of capability in South Africa, not necessarily owned by the state, but in which the state is able to put the national interest first as opposed to just the business interest, is crucial to our economy for the reasons that this kind of facility has an important role to play in supporting our economy. Not only does SAA have some 10,000 workers within the group, but it's estimated some 60,000 employees in various support industries in the aviation sector are impacted when something negative happens to SAA itself. And indeed, that has happened and has affected the revenue both in the private sector of suppliers on the one hand, but also in public sector entities such as AXA and others that derived revenue from SAA itself. So from the point of view of the tourism industry, taking into account that we are a what is called end of hemisphere destination, which has its own difficulties, which Air New Zealand, for example, faces, even Qantas has faced in a different kind of way, although its ownership structure is different, but it certainly has obligations to the government of Australia and the people of Australia as well. So from a tourism point of view, from a trade point of view, connectivity in the African region and connectivity with key trading partners is absolutely crucial. There's often an argument put forward that SAA or those links can be maintained by the private sector, but there's some interesting work that has been done in this particular regard, because essentially when you're buying an air ticket from foreign airlines, you're losing South African cash to foreign destinations as well. The second set of points, Chair, as you correctly pointed out, is to distinguish between a bailout, which is frequently used, sometimes in a misleading kind of way, and the business rescue process itself, and our ambition to ensure that what emerges from the restructuring process under business rescue is going to be a viable restructured airline that can stand on its own two feet without any further dependence on the fiscus itself. So as our understanding goes, a bailout refers to an ongoing business that is loss-making and to which more money is being put, as has been the case in the history of SAA, which over that history has been badly managed. And that again is evident in some of the events that are unfolding before Deputy Chief Justice Zondo as chair of the commission. And that this 10.5 billion and the processes that are required to undertake the restructuring of SAA under business rescue is not the normal process. So that's important to clarify. The second issue to clarify is the business rescue process itself, because the restructuring component is often not clearly understood, which we can certainly appreciate, and the business rescue practitioners will make that clearer earlier on. There's still some interference, Chair, coming from members.
Yeah, colleagues, may I once again request that we just mute our mics, and to the control team, just mute everybody, and then those speaking will, you know, unmute themselves. Murat Minister, you may proceed.
Thank you
and just
much.
To the DG of National Treasury, we will come to you shortly. So, Minister, you may proceed.
So second, as I was saying, let's clarify the business rescue process. As we understand it, and to simplify it, the first phase of the business rescue process was the responsibility of the business rescue practitioners to evaluate, firstly, whether a business is rescuable, which of course is a conclusion that they came to in December last year and early January this year. And through that process and the study of the business, develop and formulate for the purposes of adoption by the creditors a business rescue plan, which eventually happened between June and July of 2020. Once a business rescue plan is on the table, Chair, we move into the second phase, which is the implementation of that plan insofar as it affects the restructuring of the airline, meaning that in the airline itself, there were some 4,000 odd employees, and it was clear that it is unviable to continue with the employment of all of those employees, regrettably. You will remember in the past we've briefed you on processes that we have undertaken through the Labor Consultative Forum, and that through this forum, after many months of fairly constructive discussions, we were able to come to an understanding about the kind of packages, for example, that would be made available for those who apply for voluntary severance packages. And for those who do not apply for the voluntary severance packages, and again, the BRPs will make this clearer to you, a Section 189 process in terms of the Labor Relations Act will be implemented. But that involves cash, that involves money. That involves part of the 10.5 billion rands that we will put to you shortly. And that is what has been missing in the months during the pandemic's high point up to this point in time. And as a result of which, that restructuring process of paying employees their fair due, ensuring that creditors get whatever has been negotiated by the business rescue practitioners, attending to what has been described and will be described this evening as unflown revenue, that in terms of IATA rules has to be compensated for in some kind of way, some working capital to keep the airline afloat in some form, or flying in some form, which we have not been able to achieve in recent times. Again, the BRPs will explain the reasoning behind that. And to also ensure that the principal subsidiaries, Mango, SAA Technical, and Airships, undergo whatever restructuring is required there, and that there is sufficient cash available, as is available or needed for the airline, to ensure that those entities can be restructured as well. So that's part two. Part three, once the business is in the right shape and once it is in a position where all of these costs have been taken care of, and let me point out that none of the strategic equity partners that have expressed an interest in the new airline is interested in paying for these historic costs or the costs of the restructuring. So it is government's responsibility as a shareholder to find the cash and spend it in an efficient and effective way so that the restructuring processes can actually take place. Now, the new airline is phase three then of this process, and we will explain to you where that process is as we stand today and where it is likely to go in the coming months as that process is concluded. And that is being done with the assistance of a transaction advisor, as might have been explained to you in the past. If it hasn't, then that's the explanation I will give to you now. The last two or three points, Chair, is firstly to draw the distinction between restructuring and liquidation. So there are many who would have argued that we need to do away with this entity, let it collapse, or whatever the case might be. But we're actually saying to the taxpayer that all of the assets that have been built up, including the SAA brand, which still has immense value both within South Africa, on the continent, and elsewhere in the world, and the facilities that are still available at OR Tambo, and some of the intellectual capital that goes with all of that, has to be dispensed with. But briefly, liquidation, and we can come back to the details on this if necessary, entails the following. Firstly, a court process determines that a business goes into liquidation. Secondly, there's various meetings held with creditors. The liquidators take total control. Assets are actually sold. Money is recouped. Money is then distributed amongst the creditors of the business. And employees, according to the rules of the liquidation process, walk away after maybe 20 years of service with a maximum of 32,000 rands. Whereas, and compare this then to the kind of packages that have been negotiated, particularly for the low-earning workers within SAA, and of course there are many workers in other enterprises that have been affected by the pandemic and the lockdown and have had severe stress imposed upon them, both here in South Africa, but all over the world as well, as the virus finished its first wave and is now, even in the case of Europe, going through a second wave of infection. But the key point around liquidation is that you lose all of your assets. And if a new airline is to be launched and if those assets are required for the new airline, then government, as the shareholder, or whatever combination of shareholders, need to purchase those assets again, having already paid for them in the past, and bid against any private sector entity or any other entity, foreign or otherwise, that might want to cherry-pick assets as a result of the liquidation process. And what emerges from this, Chair, is that the liquidation costs are approximately the same as the restructuring costs. But the advantage of restructuring is that SAA continues to maintain its presence in the aviation industry. It is able to retain the brand and the flag that has been built over many decades. We are able to, as a shareholder, honor our commitments to labor. We should be seen as a competitor within the South African scene so that there's more competition and the South African consumers are not just price takers, which is happening when the aviation space has been narrowed and where if it were not for the pandemic and the lower loads that are now being available and being carried by planes, many airlines have been able to raise their fares and the consumer ends up as the price taker in any effect. But also we are able to minimize the domino effect on other industries, as I mentioned them earlier on. But perhaps most importantly, government is in agreement with all those who argue that it is now, as the president has indicated, when he announced the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan in Parliament, that we are in a process already in the post-capture period of reconstructing and rebuilding many of the institutions that were decimated over that period. But more importantly, that structural reforms in the broader sense is now being practiced in the narrower sense in each of the enterprises that are concerned. And structural reform and restructuring of state-owned entities is a crucial part of the economic trajectory that South Africa has to undergo as we get into the future. But it's a difficult task. So if you get into the engine room of the bigger SOEs, which include SAA as well, the task of restructuring those businesses, putting them again on a sound footing, both in an operational sense and in a financial sense, and where appropriate, changing their business models, as is happening in Eskom, for example, in terms of the Eskom roadmap, is the day-to-day task that boards and the management teams have to undertake with the oversight of the shareholder in the processes that are unfolding. So government has every intention of ensuring that we begin to give a lot more momentum to the structural reforms that are required in the SOE sector, broadly speaking, and that we remove the reliance on the fiscus by many of the entities that are designated in the various appendices or schedules of the PFMA. As far as the new airline is concerned, as I indicated earlier on, there are a number of suitors or expressions of interest, as we have been calling them, either in the airline as a group or the airline itself or in subsidiaries of the group itself. All of those processes have been diligently followed by the transaction advisor. There's briefings once a week at this point in time to the department on the progress that is being made. And there's certain aspects of that process that we are trying to speed up as well, so that early in the new year, we are able to settle for the right kind of partner as far as government is concerned. And the move, the direction that we want to go in is, if you like, what has been popularly called the telecom model, which is able to bring in an independent board, an experienced and skilled operating team, which is what serious expressions of interest have indicated to us, but a team that is able to also train a new generation, particularly of Black South Africans, who have not been given adequate opportunities within the aviation sector in South Africa, as, for example, Ethiopians or Kenyans have been able to do, where multiple generations of experienced management has developed over a period of time. And for various reasons, both historical and otherwise, we haven't produced the critical mass that is actually required. And where there were good people, both in SAA and in other entities, those good people were in fact got rid of from the organization in order that the malfeasance could actually continue. So we are unable at this point in time to give any further details, because as you will understand, these are commercially sensitive details, but we can assure you that every effort is being put in to ensure that this process is concluded sooner rather than later, and you'll hear more about this in the next weeks as we make progress in this particular direction. So my last point is to say, Chairperson, that SAA is undergoing a serious process of change. It is still, at the end of it all, a valuable public asset that needs to go into a new shape, a new direction, a new business model, which includes a better use of the various slots it has at airports, both on the continent and elsewhere, notwithstanding its presence in the South African aviation space. But in addition to that, part of that business model will be one which is going to undertake a ramping up effect, where we start on a viable scale at the beginning, and as we gain greater market share, which of course we've been, SAA has been losing over this last few months, particularly without the cash being available. But there is absolutely no doubt that under the right kind of management, there's the capability and the space is there to win back that market share as we go forward. So the restructuring process requires the cash, as I've indicated to you, and we will ensure that that cash is spent in the right kind of way, and there are discussions between the shareholder and the business rescue practitioner on mapping out the next few months in a fair amount of detail to ensure that the process, once the cash is available, is undertaken in an efficient and effective way, and that cash preservation is an important component of the direction or the manner in which spending actually takes place within this particular context. At the same time, within the next while, as we are concluding our own processes, an interim board will be announced, and a core management team will be put together to ensure that we have sufficient weight of experience within SAA, broadly speaking, in order to execute the kind of restructuring that is required and repositioning that is required by SAA itself. So the 10.5 billion rands is to be spent for the purposes that I've outlined and is a much better option than liquidation. But we will respond to questions as they arise a bit later. As far as the business rescue practitioners are concerned, Mr. Matteson, I'm not sure whether he's online because I haven't had time before I came online to check who's representing them. Mr. A representative of the legal firm, a representative, Mr. Dongwana, and his partner, Mr. Ngasana, I think I've seen somewhere amongst the names that are before me, will be representing the business rescue practitioners, and they've distributed a presentation to you and the members' chair. In addition to that, as you pointed out, they've also made available to the secretariat of the committees several documents to respond to the questions that have been raised. I'm not sure how the distribution process has actually been undertaken, but have a look at that, and if there's further information required, I'm sure that they will make that information available. Thanks for your patience and for hearing me out. So with your consent, Chair, can we then ask the representative who's going to make the presentation on the behalf of the business rescue practitioners to do so.
Okay. Right. Thank you very much, Minister, for that very extensive background. I think
we can't hear you, Chair. We can't hear you. Chair, your signal is not clear. Chair, your signal is not clear, so we could hear you.
Am I still not audible?
Now you're audible.
All right. No, I was saying thank you very much, Minister, for that background. I think it helps frame for members' government's thinking so that they can be able to...
Again, Chair, you disappear.
Treasury.
No, your voice is coming and going.
Right, let's go to the business rescue practitioners. That's where I was going.
Sorry, business Chairman. Mr. Chairman, yes. May I come in?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I am a little concerned because in the replies that took 6 months to come through from SAA, the business rescue practitioners make a big thing about them not having responsibility for Mango and air chefs and SAA technical. And so I would like to know who on this in this meeting is therefore the, acting as the accounting officer for the group as a whole. If the business rescue practitioners are not, then who is?
But can that be clarified so we can proceed to the presentation by the business rescue practitioners, and then we'll go to the Director General of National Treasury.
Chair, can I suggest something?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Because this process is an information seeking process. Therefore, why don't we allow the rescue practitioners to present And then if there is any other questions, we raise all those questions so that the meeting can flow when after the presentation, if we feel that our questions are not captured by the presenter, including the minister there.
Okay. No, I was under the impression that we just wanted to know who is from SATT and ASHIF, just names. But I think let's do this. Let's get the presentations from the business rescue practitioners because we are focused on SAA. Let's do that. And then Honorable Liz, the first order of business will be to deal with the issues that you raised. Business rescue practitioners, over to you.
Mr. Chairman, let me express my discontent with this way forward because this is what happens at these meetings. We don't deal with the right people and we don't get answers. And we wait 6 months to get half-hearted answers. But be that as it may.
No, Honourable, what I'm saying is that the issue you raise will be the first order of business when we have completed the presentation. So it's not lost. The issue will receive attention.
Thank you.
Business rescue practitioners?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Good evening to the Honourable Chairpersons of SCOPA and the Portfolio Committee of Public Enterprises. Honorable Minister of Public Enterprise, Minister Godan, honorable members and colleagues from both DPE and National Treasury. At the outset, Honorable Chair, I'd like to thank Minister Godan for the introduction, which locates appropriately our brief presentation as business rescue practitioners. Thank you for that. I would also like to extend an apology from my joint business rescue practitioner, Mr. Matuson, who is not able to make it for this presentation. And lastly, Honorable Chairpersons, I would like to draw your attention to the fact that we have sent the presentation, as Minister Godan had indicated, as well as all a number of other documentation to all the members. And I just want to draw your attention that in our presentation now, there are minor edits that we had to make on our presentation, but substantially the presentation remains the same. And without further ado, Chair, I would like to go into the presentation.
In that case, when you arrive at those changes where they've been made, please then do advise so that we are up to speed. Would you get that is where the changes have been made.
Many of the changes, Chair, have just been spelling errors and just formatting issues just to make sure that the presentation is clean and up to a standard. Nothing of substance.
Okay, that's fine. Sure, all right, sure.
You muted yourself.
I'm just trying to get the presentation going, Chair. Apologies. In terms of our presentation, Chair, it is in essentially in three buckets. The first bucket, we just provide a high-level timeline since we last appeared in front of this meeting on the 15th of May, and basically saying what are the key events that have happened since then. We then provide a quick summary of the business rescue plan, including the conditions for its fulfillment, as well as the current status of the airline. And in terms of the summary of the business rescue plan, what we really do in this presentation, we outline how we have dealt in the business rescue process, as well as in the business rescue plan, with creditors who have been owed money before the business rescue, and creditors that are owed money during the business rescue. We also deal with how we have dealt with aircraft lessors, and then we provide a quick and a brief outline on issues relating to the restructuring costs, the unflown tickets liability, as was mentioned in the introduction by Minister Godan, as well as the working capital needed to take the airline forward,
and we also touch briefly on issues relating to legacy debt and how it has been dealt with. In the current status of the airline, we provide the rationale why we had to suspend the operations of the airline, and then we provide an update around the impact of the restructuring on employees, as well as respond to the question that you raised at the beginning of your introduction, which is what is this 10.5 billion rand and what is it that the implementation is going to do with it? In terms of the timeline since we last presented, Chairpersons, on the 16th of June, the business rescue practitioners published a proposed business rescue plan, which proposed business rescue plan envisaged a restructuring of SAA into a viable, self-sustaining entity that is not dependent on a further financial support from the fiscus, as Minister Gordhan adequately explained. And more importantly, that in its restructured form, it may well attract an appropriate SEP. And that business rescue plan was then tabled in a meeting of a general body of creditors on the 25th of June in line with Section 151 of the Companies Act. At that meeting, a number of amendments were tabled, but there was also a motion from Labour for the adjournment of the meeting because Labour sought to have more time to consider the business rescue plan, as well as have enough time to provide their own proposals and amendments. That motion was agreed to by the meeting, and the meeting then was adjourned to the 14th of July, where then the business rescue plan was approved and adopted by an 86% vote from the entire body of creditors, which was quite significant because in terms of the law, once the business rescue plan has been adopted, it is then applicable and applied to all the creditors of the company. At that meeting, we also highlighted the need for the implementation of the business plan, and that critical for the implementation of the business plan was funding. It was for that reason that we also, at that meeting, had an opportunity for the Director General of Public Enterprises, Mr. Kathaso Tlhakudi, to provide a presentation to the General Board of Creditors indicating government's own willingness and commitment to the funding of a restructured SAA. And we outlined then at that meeting that we will reconvene the creditors on the 24th of July and indicate to them how far have we gone as far as the fulfillment of the conditions, which conditions I will outline in a few slides later. On the 29th of September, as a consequence of funding issues, we then suspended operations of the airline. And more importantly, I guess, for the airline is that last week in the medium-term budget policy statement, the Minister of Finance indicated an allocation of 10.5 billion from government for the implementation of the business rescue plan of SAA. Going into a summary of the business rescue plan, we negotiated leading to the tabling of the business rescue plan to the creditors meeting a negotiation with the General Body of Creditors for the compromise of amounts owing to creditors up to the time that the airline went into business rescue, which is the 6th of December, as the minister outlined. And the amounts that were owing to creditors, including employees, was in the range of 8 billion rands. And we agreed with the General Body of Creditors to a compromise that the amount would be compromised to 600 million rand, which is an equivalent of about 7 cents in a rand that would be payable to the General Body of Creditors more importantly, over a three-year period once the airline operations have restarted. One may ask, why would the General Body of Creditors accede to a compromise of 7 cents in a rand when they are owed 8 billion rand? The reason is because in a liquidation, we had done a liquidation calculation which had demonstrated that had SAA been liquidated, the General Body of Creditors would receive nothing from the proceeds of a liquidation. As the Minister had indicated, what would be the effects of a liquidation on SAA? At the same time, to a compromise with the General Body of Creditors, we also had a settlement with aircraft lessors. Aircraft lessors at the time of going into the business rescue as well as finalizing the business rescue plan, we had amounts owing to them in terms of arrears amount for the leases that we have not been able to pay. We also were liable for damages and a number of contractual claims as a consequence of us wanting to terminate those lease agreements. And that amount was in the tune of 30 billion rand. And the general, the aircraft lessors agreed to a compromise, and that compromise was to reduce the amount payable to them from 30 billion rand to 1.7 billion rand, which was equivalent to 6 month lease rentals. That amount, as is the case with the amount payable to the General Body of Creditors, is also payable over a three-year period. Finally, we also had to contend with the restructuring costs, because in order for the airline to be a viable, self-sustaining airline, it needed to reduce its overhead costs quite significantly. And in that reduction, there needed to be both a reduction in headcount for employees as well as contemplate a reduction in the terms and conditions for the restructured airline going forward. As a consequence of that process and by agreement through the leadership consultative forum that was led ably by the Department of Public Enterprises, as the Minister has indicated, there was an agreement to reduce the number of employees to 1,000, as was articulated in the business rescue plan, with a further 1,000 employees given the opportunity to participate in a training and layoff scheme. We estimated as part of the plan that the severance packages would cost the airline 2.2 billion rand. At the time that the airline went into business rescue, it started incurring costs after it had gone into business rescue from services that were provided by various suppliers and service providers, as well as salaries that are owing to employees. And that liability after business rescue amounted to 800 million rand. And that liability, unfortunately, is a liability that cannot be compromised and is required to be paid for in full. In the later slide where we talk about how we have dealt with the 10.5 billion rand allocation, we will touch on the issue around this liability to PCF creditors. We then also had to deal with the unflown ticket liability, which essentially represents all the amounts that have been paid for by passengers for bookings, but those bookings have yet to be flown. So we have received the amount, but we have not been able to fly the passengers. That amount is in the tune of 3 billion rand. And an important element about this amount is that this amount, we have an obligation, SAA has an obligation as a member of IATA, the International Air Transport Association, to make good on all ticket amounts owing to passengers. And there are two ways of making good to passengers. One, it is that the airline must refund the passenger in full, or alternatively, the airline must fly the passenger. So given the fact that we are currently not flying and there has been cancellation of flights, we then have to refund a number of passengers for their tickets. The third bullet is around working capital, and that working capital, we have 2 billion for the restart of the airline operations in the new year. And then finally, we had to deal with the legacy debt to various lenders. And this amount incorporates both the amounts owing historically to the various lenders, plus the 5.5 billion, which was advanced by both the lenders and the Development Bank of Southern Africa as post-commencement finance during the business rescue of the airline. We would recall that in the February budget, the Minister of Finance indicated an allocation of 16.4 billion to pay the legacy debt and the post-commencement funding provided by lenders and DBSA over a 3-period. And in line with that, now there is a remainder of 5.4 billion, which will be paid over the next 2 years. The conditions necessary for the fulfillment of the plan was that, one, the plan was approved by the General Board of Creditors, which approval happened and the plan was adopted on the 14th of July. The second condition was that there were approvals required from the Minister of Public Enterprises as well as the Minister of Finance that would require Section 54 approvals in terms of the PFMA as well as the Memorandum of Incorporation of the airline. And these approvals were also necessary for us to effect issues like retrenchment, issues like the cancellation of aircraft leases, as well as the return of aircraft to the various leases. The third issue or condition was that there is an agreement with employees and their trade unions around the reduction of headcount and the revision of terms and conditions. As the minister indicated, the LCF process was quite important in that regard. Ultimately, we have had to agree through the LCF process around severance packages. At the same time, we had to initiate a Section 189 process for the remainder of the employees that were not that did not take the voluntary severance packages. And finally, we had to obtain confirmation of funding from the government as the shareholder that was necessary for the implementation of the plan, and that confirmation of funding first came through a letter co-signed by both the Minister of Public Enterprises and the Minister of Finance that was provided to the business rescue practitioners. And on the back of that commitment from government, we were able to continue with the airline operations. In this slide, Honorable Chairperson and members, we summarize what then is the liability position of SAA, taking into account what had happened before the business rescue and what is the benefit or what then happens as a consequence of adoption of the business rescue plan. In summary, the General Concurrent Body of Creditors, we owed them 8 billion as a consequence of the adoption of the plan. There was a compromise that resulted in 7.4 billion being written off. And now we owe the General Body of Creditors 600 million, which is payable over 3 years. And with aircraft lessors, the amount is 30 billion. And now 1.7 billion is owing over the next 3 years. So in essence, the benefit of the compromise with the creditors and aircraft lessors is the reduction of the debt from 38 billion to 2.3 billion. We have also had the opportunity or the benefit of the legacy debt and post-commencement finance of 16.4 billion being allocated in the budget by the Minister of Finance, of which 10 billion has been paid to debt, with 5.4 billion payable over the next 2 years. Currently, in terms of the airline, since we suspended operations on the 29th December as a consequence of having run out of cash, it was important that we are able to ask the question, how do we preserve the airline operations in such a way that the integrity of the airline to risk that is preserved. So the airline then was placed under care and maintenance, and the critical under care and maintenance was that we are able to preserve the airline's membership with IATA, for example, as I've alluded earlier, as well as Star Alliance, because that's quite critical for the airline continuing as a full-service airline operating routes internationally, regionally within the African continent, and domestically. The second part was the preservation of the IT infrastructure and various systems that support the airline operations. And that is absolutely critical for the airline to be able to make its bookings, for the airline to be able to interact with various other airlines, as well as with all its stations in the various foreign jurisdictions it is operating in. And finally, making sure that there's a preservation of the assets of the airline so that the ability for the airline to restart is not compromised. It is important that we remind the members that since the level 5 kicked in March of this year, there's been a general cessation of flying operations in line with lockdown regulations. However, the airline was able to operate charter flights for the repatriation of foreign citizens to their home countries, as well as the returning of South African citizens from abroad, as well as participating in the World Food Program. And in addition to the charters, the airline has been operating cargo operations. It is important to highlight that these operations, significant and important as though they are, unfortunately, the revenue being generated from them is not adequate that it could cover and enable the airline to meet all its obligations as far as its a significant overhead structure. Chair, we now move to a quick update around the employees. The airline had over 4,600 employees in South Africa. Out of that 4,647 employees, there was a take-up for voluntary severance packages of 3,246. As a consequence, we have 1,313 remaining employees. Out of that 1,313 remaining employees, we need to have 1,000 employees in the new structure. It is important at this point to highlight that negotiations are continuing to finalize the terms and conditions for the new structure, as well as finalizing the new structure, after which then opportunities will be provided to these 1,313 employees to apply for the positions into the new structure, with the remainder of the employees being subjected to either Section 189 or the others participating in the TLS. And finally, Honorable Chairpersons, we provide on this slide the breakdown of the funding that has been allocated to SAA in the MTBPS. We have 2.8 billion allocated for funding of all employee-related payments, and this includes both the severance packages, the retrenchment packages, and amounts that are currently owing to employees as a consequence of the airline not having been able to pay employees' salaries for a number of months. The second bucket is the repayment of creditors that have been that are owing during the business rescue. The third bucket is the working capital for the restarting of operations. The fourth bucket relates to the refunds for unflown ticket liability. And then finally, and more importantly, is the recapitalization of subsidiaries being SAA Technical, SFs, and Mango, because it is important for us to remind everyone that SAA operations are significantly reliant on SAA technical in order for them to make sure that the aircraft fleet is maintained and kept in a good condition. That's the end of our presentation, Chair, and we thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you.
Well, no, right. Thank you very much, Baba. Right, DG National Treasury, I will hand over to you, and then we will then field questions, and Bob Makaka will then take over that process.
Chair, thank you very much, Chair. You know, currently Minister Gordon, I guess, captured and covered everything. We don't have any extra thing to add, and we'll only engage when the questions arise, if need be, later on. Thank you very much.
Okay. No, that's fine. All right, colleagues. I think just the one part was the clarification of the delegation that's here, and then Bob Makaka, you can proceed as to whether who will be fielding questions for SAAT and SHS.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Welcome to this part of our session. And let me explain first how I'm going to be able to identify people. I hope all our gadgets do have this option of one putting his or her hand. I think I know all my members, and I know some of the members from the SCOPA, but I will be glad if people indicate. I will take two per portfolio committee, and then we listen up until we are in a position to exhaust all our questions. Can I get an indication? There is already one. I'm waiting to get more hands. So far then, it was maybe some members. I will start with the...
Honorable Chair?
Yes?
Unfortunately, my gadget does not have that option to raise hand. I'm using the cell phone device.
Okay, thank you.
It's Becky Hadebe with H.
No, Chair, I will assist you with the SCOPA members.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you so
Chair,
much.
I will assist with the SCOPA members. They will indicate to me in the group. It's Hadebe and Liz.
Let me start with the two honorable members who happen to be women. Honorable Mkwanazi followed by Tolashe. Can I have those two first? Nicely, they are coming from both portfolio committees.
Mr. Chairman, on a point of order, Mr. Chairman, we were going to deal with my question after the presentation. We're now moving on without dealing with my question.
Okay, you would like the minister to respond to your question? Okay. Honorable Minister?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good evening to Mr. Lees. I'm sure he'll have many questions for us.
Hello, Minister. Nice to see you.
So the question is in respect of who is responsible for Mango Airships and SART. The board, as it was obtaining at that particular point in time, at the beginning of the business rescue process, was responsible for those entities. As I indicated in my earlier remarks, the sole board member remaining at the moment is Mr. Peter Chiseva, who's an attorney by profession, and he'll be joining us shortly, Chair, because he had some other commitments or couldn't join earlier. There will be an interim board in place. As I indicated earlier, there's a governance and government process that I need to complete, and hopefully sooner rather than later. Those will be the individuals that will take responsibility. I also indicated earlier that a co-management team with the appropriate level of skills and experience to guide the SAA group through this next period will be and is being put together as well. Once we've completed that process, we will take you into our confidence. And the third point that I think Mr. Lees raises is a number of questions were asked. Regrettably, the lockdown process has impacted upon all of us, but you have my assurance, Chair, that we will check on what has been responded to already and what hasn't been. Within the next week, you will have the responses that you require. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Minister.
Mr. Chairman, the point really is that right now in this meeting, the business rescue practitioners, and I noticed that we had a Mr. Klasana talking just now, doing a presentation, and he wasn't introduced.
Chairperson, Mr. Dongwana was using the
Can I just respond to that, Chair?
If Mr. Lees just gives us an opportunity, we can help to clarify. Mr. Dongwana, as I understand it, was using Mr. Nkasana's computer. So that often happens if you're using somebody else's computer. That name appears on the screen if you haven't changed the name. But it is Mr. Dongwana who introduced himself at the beginning of his presentation.
Thank you, Mr. But the point really is that we have no one who's accountable for the airline as a whole. And part of the bailouts that are being requested is 2.8, I think, or billion for
substitute. I'm raising a point of order here, Chair.
Okay. Okay, point of order. Who's that?
I am Tolashe, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Tolashe.
I'm worried with the approach of Honourable Lees, that he raised us a little technical question and he goes on to ask all the questions that he would like to raise. I thought he was just what needed to know what the minister has just given him as an answer, therefore allowing everybody else to ask the question, not introducing any technical question. Then when you get the response, then you go on to ask all your questions, whereas there's a list that you have identified of speakers that must speak. Yeah. As the way you have identified them. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Tolashe. I think you are in order. Your question, I mean, your order is sustained. Here, if Honourable Lees is having something to say, I will note him so that he can raise all his concerns when that time comes. For now, let me go according to the list in front of me. The first person to speak will be Honorable Mkhwanazi, followed by Honorable Tolashe. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I'm audible.
You are, Honorable Member.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, Chairpersons, Honourable Members, Minister, the Deputy Minister, and the Department. Chairperson, we cannot overemphasize the importance of the dynamic aviation sector in our economic advancement plans. So we need to understand SAA in the context of the overall contribution to the total value chain and ultimately the broader economy. That is why, Honourable Chairperson, I'm putting to the Honourable members in the Portfolio Committee here today that the funding of SAA economic restructuring will have a strategic and a sustainable benefit of communities that we are serving today and the nations and for the future. As the sixth Parliament, Honourable Chairperson, we must not forget that we have a task at hand to eliminate the state capture and corruption, but at the same time, ensuring governance, operational and commercial functioning of SOEs is normalized. That will require a correct focus, effort, and the financial resources. As a restructured SAA operating efficiently and on commercial principles, will also positively contribute to economic recovery of the country. Honorable Chairperson, can you allow me to ask the minister these two questions? Honorable Minister, I know that this question that I will ask has been, you have been answering it on the different platforms and in different times. But can you allow me to ask it so that for the record of this meeting, you record it correctly? What is the rescue process cost government is paying? Because there's been a conflicting numbers reflecting in the media and in other platforms. Unfortunately, many of those were just doing it, not for the benefit of the economy of the country, but they were just politicking it. They were just politicking about it. And in that answer, can you further clarify to everyone so that we are in the same level of understanding also the role of the public enterprise in the whole process? Lastly, Chair, for me now, I would like to understand from the Minister what will be the labor implications for the restructuring process and how is it being dealt with. Thank you very much, Chair, for now. Hoping I will get another time to come back. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honourable Kwanaze. Honourable Tolashe.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
There's a request for cameras to be turned on.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I really would want to appreciate the information that in putting before us in South Africans about the history and the present progress that they are making in this whole matter. The minister will take into consideration the fact that for a longer time, there's been very conflicting statements about everything that is being done in this space. Now, I would want to ask a question from the minister. The question that seeks to know, when will the shareholder take over from the business rescue practitioners? For once, if the minister can just give us that explanation. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Honorable Tolashe. Honorable Hadebe. Honorable Hadebe.
Yes, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you so much. Chair, let me welcome both presentation and welcome to the Honorable Minister. Chair, in terms of Section 132, Subsection 2C and Roman Figure 2 of the Companies Act, it states the following, Chair, that the business rescue proceedings ends when a business rescue plan has been adopted and the practitioner has subsequently filed a notice for a substantial implementation of that plan. Now, Chair, my question, Chair, would be as follows. Seeing that the plan was adopted, I think it stated on the 14th of July 2014, and we have seen the number of extensions, one extension after another. Ordinarily, in terms of the Act, the business rescue process ought to have taken at least 3 months. So now one would want to get an understanding to say how long will the restructuring process take for its completion from the administrative point of view and operational point of view. The second aspect that one would want to understand is how much has the business rescue process costed government? Because, Chair, we are dealing as a scope of oversight with the finance part of government, and one would be in the position, at least in this meeting, to be given at least a sense of the rent and sense in relation to the business rescue processes. Now, on your slide 9, when you deal with the breakdown of funding allocation, there is a portion of 2 billion, which speaks to working capital. Can we get an explanation of this component, especially in terms of how will it enable the restructuring and functioning of the airline? The other question that I'd like to get an understanding is, how will the stakeholder department take over? What plans are there for the initial process of restructuring? So in other words, who will undertake this critical task of ensuring the successful restructuring process, Chair? And one is keen and interested to know, when can we see the first flight on air of the restructured airline? It's been taking for forever, Chair, for this process to be completed. And we fully support all the initiatives behind the restructuring process. But we're waiting with keen interest to see the first flight of the restructured airline. Let me, Chair, pause there for now, and then I will make a follow-up when other speakers have made their questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Hajere. The last person on the first pool will be Honorable Kapchalia. Honorable Kapchalia.
Thank you, Chair. There's much talk about restructuring expenses versus liquidation costs, and the presentation simply talks to funding and the settlement of liabilities. But the funding envisioned for the restructuring is over and above the 16.4 billion set aside to repay guaranteed debt and debt services costs, as well as the costs of supporting the new entity as it becomes hopefully profitable. In respect of this, 6 billion rands of losses, I believe, are projected over the next 3 years. And I'd like to know, when are we going to have sight of the assumptions, because frankly, that's all they are, assumptions, that underpin the route to envisioned sustainability and profitability. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kachalia. Can we get a response on the floor questions?
Thank you, Chair. In the first instance, can I indicate to Mr. Dangwana the issues that he has to address, and then I will come back to the issues that I need to address. So starting with Honorable Nkunazi, the question of the cost of business rescue, which Honorable Adebe also raises. What is, if you like, the handover process to the shareholder or the new board and management of SAA or the new airline in its new form? The labor implications, I'll comment on that, but Mr. Dongwana might want to comment on it as well. So Honorable Tolashe also talks about, inverted commas, the handover, but I did indicate in my opening remarks that we are in discussion as a department with the business rescue practitioners on the roadmap over the next couple of months, and during which time the restructuring process, the flying interim flying, as we've been calling it, process, the conclusion of the FCP process, and in particular the handover. But it will be good to hear Mr. Dongwana's view on that particular matter. Mr. Hadebe then raises a number of issues in relation to the Companies Act. So if Mr. Dongwana could handle those. And Ms. Honorable Hadebe also raises the cost issue. So Mr. Dongwana can handle that. The working capital, perhaps Mr. Dongwana can help with that, but I would supplement his comments on that. For the first flight of the restructured airline, I'll come back to that in a moment. Mr. Kachalia's question in relation to the restructuring versus liquidation, although he doesn't elaborate on that, but I'll come back to that as well. Although I made a number of remarks in this regard in my opening comments. And then the issue around the 16.4 and the losses of 6 billion, I'll come back to that myself. So to revert to Honorable Mkunazi's questions, I think she makes an important point, Chair, about the contribution of SAA to the aviation industry, both in the sense of airlines, but also in respect of cargo, in respect of the supporting businesses, and if we can successfully get the new airline going, and I'll come back to that matter, then it will be a huge advantage for the broader industry. And what the Ekurhuleni municipality in particular and other stakeholders have been describing as the aerotropolis around Oar Tambo Airport in particular, and how that would contribute towards the industrialization processes that are envisaged in the economic recovery plan as well. She also makes the important point about the elimination of corruption and state capture. Some of that has been dealt with, but very clearly, I think both SCOPA and the Portfolio Committee and ourselves will agree that what the public wants to see is consequences for the malfeasance that has actually occurred, both in respect of the boards of directors that were responsible at various stages, and the managers and others who collaborated with them, and the businesses in the private sector who were part of the syndicates and partners, if you like, in the commitment of the commitment of crimes, inverted commas, in respect of SAA that brought SAA and indeed SAA Express to its knees as well. The role of public enterprises is a very difficult one in the current context, because as a shareholder, we have some responsibility to have oversight, as Mr. Lees was pointing out, over the remaining subsidiaries. So that has continued, but with great difficulty, as the pandemic required us to not operate from our offices and so on. So we're returning to some element of normality in that regard. But as we go through this process, we've got to be the managers of the transition in a way in which the completion of the restructuring process occurs on the one hand, and the successful partnership process with an equity partner takes place and gets off the ground. Then the labor implications of the business rescue process, my contribution would be that it has been our intent for much of the past 11 months that this process has taken to ensure that we minimize the number of people that are affected. However, the introduction of the pandemic, the closure of borders both here in South Africa, on the continent and elsewhere in the world, had a major impact on all aviation companies and airlines. And there's a long list of interventions that governments have been required to make and which are continuing at the present moment in order to support even privately owned airlines in many countries in the world. So you'd be aware of some support that, for example, the Australian government has given to Qantas, the Singaporean government has given to Singapore Airlines, the German government has bought up to about 10% shareholding in Lufthansa with quite significant conditions, including that if there's a private suitor after Lufthansa as a company and wants to buy it off, it must get the consent of the German government. The Netherlands government has invested more money into KLM and has a larger stake there. The French government has put more money into Air France to keep it afloat. And the American government has been supporting, to some extent, certain of the airline costs, not all of them, and certainly not, as is happening in many other parts of the world, bonuses for executives or payment of dividends to shareholders. And those are some of the conditionalities that has accompanied the kind of support and assistance that has been offered to the aviation industry, or what to what are considered to be national airlines in each of the contexts where government either has no shareholding or government has a minority shareholding in many of those instances as well. And the greatest impact has been on labor. So it is that for that reason that the Labor Consultative Forum was launched. There were long negotiations both on numbers in terms of employees, but also in respect of the affordable packages that we could actually offer to the employees at SAA. And in addition, we went one step further as government to actually develop a social plan and what is currently being called the training and layoff scheme that Mr. Dongwana made some mention of. And the idea here, Chair, is to retain without salary, but with some costs being paid, as many people as possible during this difficult transition, both in the sense of the pandemic, also in the sense of the restructuring process and the business rescue process, but also in respect of the revival eventually of the aviation industry that could take another few years. And that timeline of recovery depends largely on the trajectory which the COVID pandemic will undergo in our part of the world, but in other parts of the world as well. And one can see that this virus is a highly unpredictable virus, as is human behavior, because that's what's resulting in the second wave and the further, inverted commas, soft lockdowns that one sees, particularly in the European context as well. So it does mean that some people, as the numbers indicate, will lose their jobs, and that's very regrettable. However, we've tried to provide, once the money flows, as much of a soft landing as possible so that people have some money in their hands in order to rebuild their lives and begin to earn a living as well. Honorable Tolashe asks the question, when will the shareholder take over? It depends on this timeline between now and the partnership that we are talking about being actually concluded. But we, you know, the business rescue practitioners could give their views on that particular matter as well. As far as Honorable Hadebe is concerned, he's absolutely right, and one admires his knowledge of the Companies Act and the references he makes to various sections. But Mr. Dongwana will address the question of when will the BRPs get to the point where they would be able to say that the requirements of the business rescue plan have in fact been met, and a notice of fulfillment is actually lodged with the relevant authorities. He raises the question of time frames, which I've addressed. The cost of the BR process is something that Mr. Dongwana will address in a moment. And when will we see the first flight? Well, part of the 2 billion rounds that has been made reference to as working capital was in fact designed to support what we call interim flying, some of which Mango is undertaking at the moment. And that in a commercial sense means that it's important to retain as much of the market share as possible. But one has to be frank with the South African public and yourselves that the delays in getting the right amount of funding into this process for the restructuring process has actually cost us market share. So the incoming executives and board is going to have a difficult task in terms of broadening the market share that either Mango or SAA would be able to come. We are confident that with the right skills, they will be able to maneuver themselves in the current environment. The distinction between restructuring and liquidation, Chair, that Honorable Kachalia raises is a very important distinction. It's a distinction, as I pointed out, and I'm not going to repeat the points that I made earlier on, where the costs are approximately the same, but the casualties are very different. That in the restructuring process, there are huge benefits, as I outlined earlier on, and in the liquidation process, in fact, there's no winners except those who are able to cherry-pick assets that belong to the South African public. In terms of the 16.4 billion rands, that's legacy debt. So part of the amount borrowed from the lenders, 2 billion rands for the post-commencement finance, has been repaid. The Treasury can confirm that. The 3.5 billion rands made available by the DBSA has also been repaid. Part of the legacy debt has also been repaid. That gives us the 10 billion that was mentioned earlier on. Then we come to the last point that Honorable Kachalia made, which is in respect of the existing business plan, there will be losses made. But let me say absolutely categorically that in the discussions with our strategic equity partners or potential strategic equity partners, whilst they are making it clear that they will not pay for restructuring costs, nor will they want, or put it the other way, then they will want to bring in their own operational teams, and we would add the South African flavor to it and make sure that South African aviation intellectual capital and human capital grows in that process as well. At the same time, we are making it clear that government is not going to put any money into this process, apart from the various assets that it actually has. And those negotiations are ongoing. So we have to recalibrate each of the plans at different stages. And a further recalibration will be required toward the end of the year, which takes cognizance of what is the state of the pandemic, how many people are fearful of flying, and how many people are actually able to fly, and take the necessary risks that are involved, and whether, in fact, there would be internal tourism taking place or not. And certainly my colleague, the Minister of Tourism, would like all South Africans to utilize our own South African facilities so that the tourism industry can be kept alive. And there might be a foreign dimension to tourists as well. To what extent that would happen, one doesn't know. It depends on the state of the pandemic from the destinations from which tourists actually come through. But that recalibration, Chair, will be part of the ramping up process and the start off process itself. So going back to Honorable Hadeva's point, we would certainly like to see some of the flights taking place as early as possible once we go through the restructuring process and gradually build up the capital. I think what is crucial, and which is my last point in response to the questions, is that if one is entering into a business partnership and into a business relationship between one entity and another entity, one does not want to take a completely decimated entity, devoid of any value, with no value proposition at all, into a partnership, because your ability to negotiate the right kind of partnership deal is obviously compromised. So it's in the interest of SAA, broadly speaking, it's in the interest of government and the South African public that we do exactly what Mr. Dongwana spelled out earlier on, which is preserve assets, preserve the brand, preserve whatever intellectual capital we have, and preserve the assets that SAA has in routes and slots and so on. And that becomes an important part of the bargaining process in terms of the shape that the eventual shareholding of the future airline takes, in which government might not be a majority shareholder. And that's why we make reference to the telecom model. And there's been a lot of confusion in this particular regard, and hopefully we've helped to clarify that now and will continue to clarify it into the future. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Dongwana, if you give him the opportunity, we'll answer
the remaining questions.
Mr. Dongwana?
Thank you very much, Minister. I'm going to start at the bottom with the from Honorable Kachalia, the assumptions that are attached to the business rescue plan are also contained in the business rescue plan. But I think an important issue, leveraging off what the minister has said, is that we have to recognize that the restart of operations is going to be significantly dependent on how the broader aviation industry in the world is opening up and how each and every country that we fly into is responding to the pandemic. And that's very important. And so we continuously look towards IATA as well as other bodies around what are the trends, what is currently happening, because that's going to be very important in how the airline restarts its operations. On the issue of the working capital that was raised by Honorable Hadev, it is important for us to remember that we are restarting the airline operations on the back of the airline not having been flying as a consequence of the lockdown due to COVID-19, as well as the fact that it ran out of cash. So in order for the airline to build up a pipeline of revenue for it to restart operation, it becomes important that it invests some money into restarting operation, making sure that it is ready when it has got adequate load factors for it to start flying, because we have to contend with two facts. One, because we already owe 3 billion in unflown ticket liability, it is important that we remember that when we start flying, a significant number of the passengers that will be flying had already paid their money, and that money had already been used. So this working capital is quite critical in bridging that. The second thing is relating to the fact that it's going to, depending on how the opening of the skies is working, it's going to take a while to build adequate pipeline in order to fly profitably. Thus, working capital becomes absolutely critical to give the airline the best chance of success. More importantly, linked to that working capital, and it relates to the question that has been asked by Honorable Mkwanazi around what are the labor implications. The labor implications for the airline, in addition to what the minister has said, are twofold. One, we have to deal with the sins of the past, which is to reduce the headcount of the airline to an appropriate size. Two, we have to create an appropriate cost line for the airline going forward. And that talks to the revisions of terms and conditions, where we've been negotiating with labor, because the new terms and conditions of employment are significantly less than the current terms and conditions of employment. A lot has been said about, for example, the salaries of certain categories of employees and the benefits. And in the revised terms and conditions that we have been negotiating with labor, those have been reduced quite significantly, which is very important. On the issue of the substantial implementation from Honorable Mkwanazi, it is indeed important that first there is an adoption of the business rescue plan, but there's also the second element in order for business rescue practitioners to file for substantial implementation and hand over the company back to management, the board, as well as the shareholder. And that goes back to the definition of a business rescue in Section 128, because Section 128 is quite important. It talks about the ability to restore the operation so that the business continues in existence on a solvent basis. Now, in one of my previous slides, I indicated how we have compromised the debt. And that debt compromise, together with the amount of money that has been repaid by government for legacy debt, creates a basis for the airline to have a solvent balance sheet. But that's only one part. The second part is liquidity. it is important for the funding that has been allocated and appropriated for the airline to actually flow into the airline, so that when the business rescue practitioners leave, they leave an airline that is both solvent and liquid for its liabilities as they fall due. And that process is quite important, because notwithstanding the fact that we currently have an allocation, but the funds are yet to flow. And it's important that we make sure that the airline is not put into a riskier position by exiting business rescue when the airline doesn't have the amount of liquidity that is necessary, so that it can then continue in existence on a solvent basis, and more importantly, on a liquid basis. The last issue, which combines a question by Honorable Mkhwanazi as well as Honorable Khadebe, as to at what point how are we going to deal with the handover? And I think it's an important point. We've already started, as the minister has alluded, working with the department under the leadership of the Director General on working on a roadmap, that is facilitating the transitioning from the business rescue process and after the business rescue process. And that roadmap contemplates quite a number of issues in terms of what needs to be done, who gets to do it, and by when it must be done. And at the core of that roadmap is that, one, we have to finalize the new structures for the airline, so that in finalizing the new structures of the airline, we are able to allocate the remaining individuals in the 1,000 to the right positions. The importance of those right positions is that they are very important post holders that the airline needs to have, that are important for the airline to retain its airline operating certificate. And that process is absolutely critical. So as part of the voluntary severance packages that have been signed, one of the critical issues has been to make sure that we do not lose people who are key placeholders, so that we compromise the airline operating license. And that's very important. And the last part is that the members would recall in one of the presentations we had given, we had spoken at length about implementing processes to make sure that there's an absolute spotlight in terms of how the airline manages its cash and manages the risk relating to cash, so that we make sure that the airline, one, it is spending the right amount and obtains the right value for the services. And so that process is quite critical, and it's important for the business rescue team that it is able to hand over that process to the appropriate management. And so, as the minister says, the responsibility of putting the board and the new executive is the responsibility of the shareholder. And it becomes important then that we are able to transition and hand over to that executive, that there is a seamless transition. Finally, on the issue around the business rescue cost, Honorable Chairperson, you will recall that as we did in the last time, we would rather provide the two committees with a written response on that, because I can't remember all of the costs off the top of my head. Thank you.
Okay, honourable members, now we still have to take the I will take everybody now, led by Honourable Mende, followed by Lias. Can we just kick on, Honourable Mende?
Chair, I would like to also make a follow-up.
Okay, noted. Okay, noted.
Chairperson, Honourable Malinga also has a question.
This is the time, just we are showing the time of Honourable Mende. She put her head up in time.
All right, thank you, Chair. Chair, two questions. One, I want to direct this one to Treasury. as the sponsor of the funding, taking note of how the Auditor General comes to play in terms of overseeing the funds and how were they spent. Is National Treasury looking into the real-time audit of this fund? If so, do they have people that are going to be allocated from the side of the AG and their side as the Treasury office? We are not going to be pretending as if stories of maladministration and mishandling of funding hasn't taken place, in particular at the SAA. So we don't want history to repeat itself. What precautions are in place in order to ensure that the liquidity, which was referred to by Mr. Dongwana, is kept afloat, and that the working capital in particular is allocated to the operation of the aircraft, of the aircraft of the SAA. Secondly, the restructuring costs, which components of it goes to workers. We've seen how the workers of SA Express are suffering. As much as it's a different method and a tool that has been utilized for SA Express, now in terms of restructuring and leaving only the 1,000 people, where you are saying you have put aside 2.2 billion to deal with that matter, do we have precautionary measures to ensure that none of those people who will come back and say they have not received their monies and their monies will have been mishandled by whoever is in charge? So I'd like the Treasury to respond here as well as the DG to give us some indication and assurance that there are plans in place to oversee the allocation of funds and ensuring that none of it is going to where it's not supposed to go to. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Elias.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it's rather unfortunate that Mr. Dongwane played down the changes to the document, because there were some significant changes to the document made, including a completely new slide, arithmetic that doesn't add up, the 16.4 billion. Now the paid amount has changed from 11 to 10 billion. So I'd like clarity on which is the accurate figure there. So it's rather unfortunate that the changes weren't properly highlighted as we. And then he says he's produced this report on the questions asked in May, which we waited 6 months for. Well, there are many questions which simply are not dealt with, and are brushed aside. As if we can, as Parliament, be treated with this kind of disdain. It's really unfortunate, Mr. Chairman. One of the sort of brushed aside short answers is to refer to an approach the BRP's made to Ethos. Now, I'm not sure whether who Ethos is, so if we could please be told the details of this approach to Ethos. Who are they? What was the approach? What was the outcome of that approach? Mr. Chairman, one of the questions that needs answering in terms of assessing the way forward is, how many aircraft are now left at with SAA for the use of SAA? How many aircraft are left, and how many have been returned to the lessors? Chairman, Honourable Mente touched on South African Express, but can Minister Gordon please let us know whether the severance package that's being offered to SAA is going to be offered to SA Express, and if so, when and how, and if not, why not? Why are SAA employees being treated differently from SA Express employees? And then in terms of the process of reducing the numbers at SAA, what is the process to be followed to select the people to be retained both in the cabin crew and in of the pilots? And why are severance packages being paid to people in jobs where the jobs are going to apparently continue? In other words, we're going to pay severance packages, get rid of more people than are required in a particular category of employee. Why is that done? I mean, it just doesn't make any financial sense at all. With regard to these voluntary severance packages, Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering whether you could turn your camera off, please, because it seems to be that we're looking at you all the time. The employees who get paid the voluntary severance package, will they then also be able to claim retrenchment benefits from the unemployment insurance fund? Now, Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons that I was trying to get clarity about who is accountable here for SAA, the question really is why the annual report for SAA has still not been made available for the 2018-19 year, long before business rescue, long before the COVID-19 lockdown. Why is that annual report, which was due in September last year, more than a year ago, still not available and not being tabled in Parliament? Chairman, there's much been made by the Minister and Mr. Dongwane about the uncertainty about the future in terms of how it's going to play out. And so the question asked by Honourable Kachalia is a very valid one in terms of what the actual losses are going to be in the future. But even more important, Mr. Chairman, the working capital that Mr. Dongwane has made much of in order to see the airline through to...
Can I intervene, please? Chairperson?
Yes.
Can I appeal to Mr. Lees that he doesn't make snide remarks about Mr. Dongwana or about myself by keep using terms like much has been made? He's welcome to ask any question, and we, with the appropriate level of dignity, that is what is expected in a parliamentary context, and we will certainly reply with the same decorum. But I think the snide references like much being made can be avoided out of respect for each other, if for nothing else. Thank you, Chair.
May I have the privilege of coming in here after the Minister, please?
Honourable Kachalia, I have to quickly rule on that one. Honourable, yes, I think I was also about to persuade you to concentrate more on issues that you want to raise in relation to what is in front of us. swiping, taking a swipe on members and the people that were invited in this session is not going to help us, because we are a portfolio committee and we are not supposed to play party political kind of gestures here. Please continue, sir.
Chair, can I come in here, please?
Come in.
Mr. Lees has been very measured in his response. When he refers to much has been made, he might as well be saying,
there is only one referee so long. For now, there is only one referee.
This railroading is ridiculous with respect.
Of course. Please, we are not going to finish if we continue that way. People have raised issues and they want those issues to be responded to. Therefore, then we must not delay that process. Honourable Member, you know what you're not supposed to do. This is a portfolio, it's a joint portfolio session. It's not like a National Assembly kind of a session. Continue, sir.
Mr. Chairman, the use of the term much has been said is normal use in the English language and was not intended as a snide remark. And if it was taken that way, I certainly apologize. But a lot has been said about those things. So it's just normal English language. And Minister Gordhan, I think, understands that. But my apologies if it was taken as though it was a snide remark. Mr. Chairman, so now let me get back to where I was. Mr. Dongwane and Minister Gordhan have stated that in a liquidation, the creditors would get no dividend. My question then is, if that is the option, why have we offered them any dividend at all in a business rescue situation? And that includes unflown tickets. There are billions of rands that we're giving away where we don't need to give anything away. Creditors have knowingly, over a very long time, done business with a bankrupt company being SAA. They have taken that risk. It has been public knowledge for years that SAA was bankrupt. They took the risk. Why are we now taking taxpayer money to pay them? Mr. Chairman, the question of the bailouts for SAA Technical, Air Chefs and Manga, on what basis then? Because the business rescue practitioners are adamant that only the SAA airline and not the group are in business rescue, and I'm sure that is accurate. On what basis and what authority then do the business rescue practitioners have to include bailouts for the subsidiaries? Dondo, your microphone's on. On what legal authority do they have to intervene in the business of Mango, SAA Technical, and Air Chefs? I don't understand, but then I'm just a bookkeeper and a simple member of parliament and not a legal person. So I'm curious on what authority do they have for that. Mr. Chairman, can I please be given reasons why Les Matteson is not present at this meeting? He and his firm have taken millions of rand in fees to participate in this business rescue process. We have had one meeting since May tonight. On what basis is Mr. Matheson not present to account for what has happened under his management as a co-business rescue practitioner? Mr. Chairman, there seems to be an assumption by Mr. Dongwana that the money is guaranteed. But it's certainly not guaranteed. And I would hope that Parliament will use its wisdom and ensure that the money is either not allocated or appropriated, or is tied up far more firmly and resolutely than it is now. Mr. Chairman, the question of the one of the stats that came from you, and thank you for answering that part of my many questions from May fairly accurately, was the percentages of salaries paid to various categories of employee during April and May. By now, we should have had a report going much further than that, but anyway, taken 6 months to answer the question. So why did the chief pilot get 100% of his salary in April when no one else in the airline got 100%? How is that possible? Ground staff got 77.99%. Cabin crew got 76.21%. But the chief pilot gets 100% of his salary. And even for May, the chief pilot gets 77.7%, whereas the ground staff got 16.8%. And cabin crew got 11.6%. Why was the chief pilot so important that he or she got such a high proportion of their salary? Now, Mr. Dongwana, you talk about key places to keep the airline going.
Okay, hold on, Mr. Lees.
Yes, somebody's
calling me.
It's me,
Chair Mawoto. Mawoto, yes, Mawoto.
Chair, I just want to ask a question. How many questions has Mr. Lee already asked, and how many more to go? Because I don't know if anyone is taking stock of what he's saying and how he's going to respond, because we have questions that we want to ask, but there's no indication of is he going to finish anywhere in the near future, or we're going to be here until tomorrow? Please.
Okay.
Can I also follow there?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I also wanted to really appeal. We meant to finish at 9. Now, we are all members of Parliament here. We seek answers. It's a joint meeting. Now, this might be a practice in Scopa that colleagues go on and wants to ask everything, and clearly they've got lots of information, how many people getting paid, or they know their personal payment. I don't know how do they know that. But nonetheless, can the member really conclude? We need to also ask questions. When is the executive going to answer? Also, the business practitioner. It's really unfair. Thanks.
Okay.
In view of the issue, okay. I'm happy to be here until tomorrow.
I will, next time you do this, it will be your seek of permission to leave this session. Can I appeal to Honourable Liz to conclude his input, because there are other people who still want to engage here. Thank you so much.
Chairperson.
Yes, sir.
I don't mean to interrupt your session, but I think let us not make categorizations about committees, rather characterizations about committees, which may not sit well. Because in as much as there may be issue with the extent to which Honorable Liz is asking questions, but I don't think let us make generalizations and categorizations about practices of committees in a manner which may seek now to cause a standoff between the two committees, because okay. I am still under the impression that we have got a particular interest which is common about the state of affairs of SAA. And clarity must be made that the information you are speaking about, what I indicated to earlier, that has been requested in May, and the minister indicated that information had been brought forth, and I'm still going to go back to it. But I don't think that the characterization being made is a fair one, because it seeks to... let me just end it there. But I think I must come in on that.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. That point is taken. I think the members that raised that, they understand your point. But let's give you a minute to conclude, Honourable Liz. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm addressing this to the SCOPA Chair, this is exactly why we should not have joint committee meetings. They do not work. And talk about snide remarks, well, I leave that for you to judge.
So on a point of order, please, Chairperson.
No, Mr. Chairman, I've said nothing out of order, really. It's just...
I don't think it's your responsibility, Honourable Lee, to tell me that you are not out of order. I am referring my order to the Chairperson. Can you please respect that, please, Honourable Lee? You know what's wrong with you today.
Okay, your point, Honourable Lees, can you hold on? Your point of order, Honourable Donation?
Chair, I think what the Honourable Shengwa is saying suffices. Can we please proceed? I'm not sure what are all these delaying tactics are for today. Honourable Lees, could not speak on everybody's behalf here. We are members of Parliament from different political parties. We work as a team. So we don't want what he's doing. If the chair speaks on behalf of the committee, which is COPA, I think that's fine. Not everybody should do that. Thank you.
Okay, Honourable Dulash, I hear your concern, the honourable members. That's why I've asked him to just round off because of that example. Honourable Liz, please, I wouldn't like to stop you before you finish, but don't take us too far.
Chairman, I haven't spoken on behalf of any other members of the committee. I speak on my own behalf, and so that is what it is, Mr. Chairman. And the issue of SAA is one which is gripping the whole nation as we speak. Many, many, many millions of South Africans are watching the outcome of this whole process. Anyway,
so that's your conclusion now.
Thank you.
Okay. You're done with this?
For now, I'm done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Honorable Malinga?
Finally. Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to all the members in the committee. Forgive my video chair. If I do open it, then I'll be kicked out of the meeting due to the network situation. Chairperson, the ANC support the government's decision on the continued operation of SAA and the endeavors to fund the revival of SAA. And not in its liquidation is based on the fact that SAA is an agency of multifaceted value-added economic activity for the country. Having said so, Chair, I'd like to ask, what are the critical benefits of the business rescue process besides the large reduction of the liability, which is definitely positive? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Malinga. Honorable Hadebe, you asked to be given a follow-up question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me also thank the Minister and Mr. Ndongwana for the questions. However, Chair, we have follow-up, especially to Mr. Ndongwana. He has indicated that he has a roadmap. And Chair, by its nature, roadmaps have dates, time frame, and milestone projection. Now, my question was very clear. When is the business rescue practitioner planning to file a notice of substantial implementation of the plan, which was adopted by the 14th of July, by the way? And we need to know, because, Chair, ordinarily, this process was meant to take 3 months, and they've exceeded that. Now, when we are not given dates, it's quite concerning. Second aspect is that, as things stand, Mr. Ndongwana does not know how much the process has cost to date. So I'd like to get a very straightforward answer. Section 132A and B indicates that if you have not completed your plan within 3 months, you are compelled to provide a progress report on your proceedings. Now, that progress report includes time frames. This is what we're going to achieve at this date, and this is how far we have gone. Can I get a direct answer in this regard, Chair? And it's quite concerning, lastly, Chair, that the rescue practitioner does not know how much they've cost government to date in terms of their proceedings. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable, thank you, Honorable Hadebe. Honorable Maoto.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to be brief. Mine is on the conditions of fulfillment of the BR plan. There's about five conditions there that are put forward by the business rescue practitioner. Now, my question is to the minister, who is seized with making sure that these conditions are met? And at what cost is that entity or an individual assist with that? That's number one. Number two, none of these conditions have got a date that is linked to it. For example, there are five. The fifth one talks about cancellation of all aircraft leases. When? By when? Because we need to know how long this plan is going to take and all that. And then the last one, Chair, is the suspension of operations, which is on slide, the second last slide, talking about the suspension of operations, because the airline has been under care and maintenance due to funds for operational expenses being depleted. Now, what is the plan? The funds are depleted. The operations are suspended. So what does it mean then to SAA? And then the last one is the pledge that government has put forward of 10.5 billion. How is that going to address the issue of a funding requirement as per Annex B of the presentation? And that will be all from my side, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Maudwe. Honorable Kashalia, is your hands up or it was there? You didn't remove it?
Yeah, it's a follow-up question.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. It's a follow-up question in response to my question about the assumptions in the business rescue plan. And in response to my question, we've been told that this is dependent on the pandemic, the assumptions that is. Now, I would venture that a business rescue planner worth his salt needs to nail their colors to the mast. You cannot say, I'll put up X rands because I want to, not because I have an idea of which way the wind is blowing, and I'll calibrate it as the wind blows, which is what I have heard. The question I have, and which I alluded to originally, which is, what are the assumptions? What are the scenarios? What are the best case scenarios? What are the worst case scenarios? What are the middle case scenarios? How does this government, how does this govern investment decisions? Clearly, load factors are crucial. So are cost factors, and both influence financing factors. And decisions that are taken in that regard. We need more detail. We don't have it. The detail needs to be mapped in terms of leases, in terms of trends, in terms of concomitant impact to ensure that valuable monies are not squandered. These are the things which we, as this committee, should be asking for, and we should have complete clarity on this. The country wants it. We want it. It is necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kachalia. Let me take to you, Chair. Can you come in, Chairperson of the SCOPA?
Thank you very much. I'll be
can't hear.
Chair, your signal is very poor, Chair.
I'm going to turn off my camera, Chair. I'm going to turn off my camera to save network rural problems, yeah.
Okay.
Chair, the National Treasury, 10.5 billion rands that is being advanced to SAE for the purposes which have been explained to us today. The question then becomes, because for the longest of time the issue has been that there's no money, and of course we're in an economic climate which as it is, not favorable in the country, where are you getting the 10.5 billion rands from? Where are you making the adjustments and environments in the budget to overall, in order for you to have this 10.5 billion rand available to SAA. I want to put it to the business rescue practitioner that I do not accept his response to the issue of costs, because in the last meeting, when we parted ways, this question was put to the business rescue practitioners, and they're going to go and get information. And today, the response is the same. And so I call on the business rescue practitioner to source that information now during this meeting so we can bring the issue to rest. I do not think he's engaging with us in good faith on that one, and I don't think we should be going around in circles. I draw your attention, Chair, to because the question has been asked about SAT and SHFs and so on, the other entities. I was pulling up the set of minutes here which were provided to us by as part of some of the responses that we wanted from SAA. In those minutes, it was put to us that it is
you again disappeared, Chair. You have disappeared, Honorable Chairperson.
Business rescue practitioners who will take, if that decision can be expanded or limitations,
Chair.
Rather, so that we all
have this. Honorable Chairperson.
Yes.
You disappeared for 2 to 3 seconds. Chair, Honorable Shengwa, in the light of...
He must come back to Parliament, Chair.
Honorable Shengwa.
He must come back.
We'll have to take the issue of the
practitioners and they being them to unpack that decision. Yes.
Am I audible now?
Yeah, you have not been audible for more than 3 minutes.
You may proceed.
Yeah, okay.
No, you may proceed, Chair. I'll come back.
Yeah, because now the time is 10 to, we might not come back to you. I'm taking the last question here who has been Honorable Shabalala. Honorable Shabalala. Honorable Shabalala. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry about this. I was trying to unmute myself. Chair, listening the presentation and the meeting itself, and just to also say perhaps to the Chairperson of SCOPA, Honorable Shengwa, and members of SCOPA, let me withdraw officially when we are seconding order on the member leave for taking too long. It was not meant to divide the committees necessarily. It's just that I was just shocked that the member was just taking too long. But I apologize and I withdraw for that, so that there's no generalization, like you said. Now, Chair, I want to ask to the BRPs, when you took over, the question has been asked, but I agree totally with them. I don't even want to repeat the question he's making. It's a very crucial question. We are interested to find out the costs to the state in terms of what has been assigned to yourself, what have you delivered? Because we need to check value for money. We're very interested in that. So the sooner you give us that information, the better. It might not be today by the looks of things. Now, I want to find out from yourself that what did you understand insofar as the airline capacity when you came in? Did you really check when we talk about the self-sufficiency on the airline? How much does it have capacity to really generate money to the fiscus? It's some question that I really would feel that if you can really answer us around that. What fees have you collected as the BRP? What fees are still to be collected as the BRP? And does the business model outlined by the BRP mean that the entity will reduce its dependency on the fiscus? If so, how at what amount will the new business really, as you suggest, as we are working on the new restructuring? But also to say, Chairperson, unequivocally so, as the NC, we support the allocation and the restructuring of the new airline and the winding up, but also the understanding that this is not a bailout, and the sooner we get that right, the better. Now, the business rescue plan I want to know about preserving the few black pilots that we have. How are you, how are they ensuring exorbitant pilot salaries? Because we know that pilots are getting exorbitant salaries. At some point, there's implication that we don't want to take it over so that it ends up crippling the new airline, if not, bolting it, for a lack of better word. But how are we ensuring that in the new business plan, we don't have these exorbitant salaries? Can you also make a comment, why is it important to provide employees with decent severance packages? And part of why I'm asking that, for me, that it's important for families and communities linked to SAA employees, that they should not be condemned, really, to poverty and the many years that they've dedicated to building the airline, and it should be recognized and rewarded. And for me, crucial. And the sooner we take out the message, it's the better. And of course, we can never stop but to really encourage that we need to sing perhaps at one hymn on this matter, because it affects all strata. The last point, Chairperson, so that I don't become like the other person, is that SBNC, the policy on also SOEs is clear. All those which operate in important areas of the infrastructure of the economy and make a major contribution to the GDP should be assisted to recover. So we should not be throwing our hands in the air like all SOEs that don't have capacity to really come out of this quagmire they find themselves. What is encouraging is that there's a process and there is plans that are coming out. It can only be fair that we give this plans a chance. And as part of Way Forward Chair, I feel these meetings are very important so that we collaborate, then we don't find ourselves really straining the resources that we have of calling and the misinformation at times that each committee might have over the other. So I think that as part of Way Forward, for us to really look into the plan and get the information as we continue. Minister, just the last point, can you really tell us why do we need to really have a new airline? Why do we really have to restructure this airline? And why do you believe that this plan can work if you can assist us on that? Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Shalawala. Can we get the response from me and the... Hello, who's that?
It's Tengwa. I've logged on with another device. I'm not sure if I'm audible.
Okay. The difficulty is whether you have already heard other contributions that take place.
No, I have. I'm not sure which part was not audible, but I think the business rescue practitioner would have heard me that. I think
it was the end.
Okay, that's fine. Chair, I think there has to be a thinking along the lines here of hindsight being the best sight. And by that I mean we do need to, as Parliament, build on what the Zondo Commission is doing insofar as the parliamentary inquiry into how SAA collapsed. An airline can't just collapse. Because if we're going to pump money into a new airline without having taken stock of the set of circumstances which characterized the collapse of the first one, we may then repeat the same mistakes. And this is all must be done with the view of protecting and safeguarding the public purse from further squander and further collapse. Because there is generally a sense that you can dispense with the old without consequence. And I think there's merit to what the minister said in drawing parallels at the start of his input with what is happening at the Zondo Commission. We cannot escape the corruption that has taken place. We cannot escape the mismanagement. And so we need not duplicate what that commission is doing, but when it's done, maybe worthwhile to complement its work because it's got a broad scope of things and it may not delve deeply and thoroughly into the SAA matters so that we can be able to satisfy ourselves that whatever action step is taken moving forward, we have been able to draw the best lessons out of this. There's been mention of it in certain parts of this meeting about what other governments are doing, but substantively, we do need to reflect on what happened at SAA. The role of the shareholder has to be unpacked. And of course, hold people accountable for what they did because there has to be recoveries here. You already settled the situation of the directors have been declared as delinquent directors. And the list goes on about some of the things which have prevailed at SAA. Pay disparities. Which have happened, some of them along racial lines. All those things combined have to be looked at and whether the structure of SAA was conducive for a sustainable and viable airline, the sale of assets, what did that do? If we don't take time to look at the root cause of the collapse, all the
good intentions which may be presented today characterizing the business rescue plan may find themselves wanting if we continue doing things in the same way. I just wanted to make that observation and draw the attention of colleagues that there's a Zulu saying, we have to clean the room first so that we know how to move forward. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Minister and Mr. Doan, I think it's yours now to answer and conclude and put everything into perspective.
Thank you, Chair. Let me ask Mr. Dongwana to go first and let him answer whatever he can, and then I will respond to those questions that I'm required to respond to and round up so that we save time. Thank you, Chair, if you agree.
Yes, I agree.
Thank you, Minister, and thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm going to start with the questions by Honourable Lees. Honourable Lees, indeed, the amount you referred to, the 11 billion and the 10 billion issue, the actual amount is actually 10.9 billion, which rounds up to 11. And I do think there's a typo in the presentation. So, apologies for that. The aircraft, the SAA has got 8 owned aircraft, and those are still in the possession of SAA. The remainder of the, I think the number is 40 and it's outlined in the business rescue plan, were all leased from various aircraft lessors. And all those aircrafts have since been retained. And an important part of the issues relating to aircraft is that the onerous obligations to continuing maintaining the aircraft even when they are not flying. Thus, it was important for us to settle an amount for debts owing by us to aircraft lessors as a full and final settlement so that we limit the various penalties and other related payments that would have been accruing to various aircraft leases for as long as those aircraft remain on in the possession of SAA. On the issue of severance packages offered to employees, I'd like to make a couple of points. One, the Leadership Consultative Forum was quite critical in negotiating and agreeing what severance packages were going to be paid to employees. And those are in line with the basic conditions of employment at the minimum. The second and most important thing, as far as availing the voluntary services, voluntary severance packages to all employees, is a critical issue. And the critical issue is that in the new structure, we have put in place new terms and conditions of employment. And the new terms and conditions of employment, at the minimum, they reduce their salaries for across all levels of employees. So there's a significant salary reduction, as well as reduction in terms of a number of benefits accruing to employees. Thus, we have been advised appropriately by our legal advisors from an employment point of view that we cannot change conditions of employment of employees unilaterally. We have to negotiate them. And once we have negotiated them into the new structure, we had then to offer employees an opportunity to take the new positions with the revised terms and conditions, failing which we then have to retrench the employees. So that is the approach that has been taken. And it links to that critical issue of saying, going forward, how do we make sure that the airline
over and above just reducing the current debt by virtue of a compromise with various creditors, but it also has a sustainable overhead cost going forward. We had committed to Scopa that we're going to send management accounts, and I would like to believe that we did send the management accounts of the airline for the recent year. On the issue of ethos, I am aware that my joint business associate practitioner, who I did indicate at the beginning, I extended his apology because he's not here because of personal reasons, that he was indeed approached by ethos, and the approach related to issues of an SEP and funding. And he directed ethos to the transaction advisor. I think the minister indicated that there is a transaction advisor who is dealing with the issues of SEPs and the whole process relating to potential partners going forward of the airline. The question about why a dividend to the general concurrent body of creditors when in a liquidation they would have received nothing. I think it is important that we put it openly to the meeting. Mm-hmm. That at the point at which we are working towards a restructured airline and that the airline continues in existence, it becomes important that we recognize that we need the support of the various suppliers and service providers to the airline. To the extent then that you want to continue in operation, it becomes important that we're able to negotiate a reasonable compromise of the debt that the airline owes to the general body of creditors. And it is on that basis, and taking into account the limited funds available going forward, that there was a negotiation that resulted in the 600 million for general concurrent creditors and the 1.7 billion for aircraft lessors. On the issue of the unflown ticket liability, I would like to mention again that it is an essential part of the airline maintaining its membership with IATA, that the airline is able to make good in full either through a refund or by flying the passenger on the unflown ticket liability. Not only is that important for IATA, it is also important for the Star Alliance. It is also important for the various code-sharing agreements with various individual airlines. So for SAA seeing itself continuing flying, it is important that it honors that so that it is able to continue. On the issue around the various issues around the chief pilot and the various salaries that have been paid and percentages, I am not in a position to answer that question, Honorable Liz, and I am more than happy that if there are any missing questions that we get them in writing so that we can respond fully as business associate practitioners through the channels that we've been using of providing answers to various questions to Parliament. Honorable Malinga raises the issue of what other benefits are there in business of being in business rescue besides just the reduction of the debt. I think beyond just the reduction of the debt, probably the first benefit of being in business rescue is that we would remember that a company goes into business rescue because it is in financial distress, and financial distress is defined in the Act, and it includes the fact that the company is unable to meet its obligation as they fall due. Immediately when the company goes into business rescue, it has got the benefit of a moratorium. the moratorium is on it not needing to pay any of the amounts owing to various creditors. The second issue that it benefits directly from is the ability to have a moratorium on all legal issues against the company. So essentially then the business rescue provides a safe space for the company to raise the necessary post-commencement funding to effect or implement the business rescue plan, to restructure its affairs, to resize its overheads in a way that then when it ultimately gets out of business rescue, it can continue in existence on a solvent basis. And so that is a benefit of business rescue. And this is important because it talks to the issue raised by Honorable Hagen as to when then does the company get out of business rescue. And I would like, at the risk of repeating what I've said, that I think the important issue is that we must remember that at the moment we have an allocation, but we do not have cash. There is no funding that has flown into the company. And so if the company, for argument's sake, were to get out of business rescue at this point with immediate effect, the reality is that the company will not be able to meet its obligation as they fall due today. And so the business rescue process then, it provides that safety net for the company because it is able to continue until it has received the funding that has been committed and outlined in the plan. And on the basis of receiving that funding, then the substantial implementation of the business rescue plan is there. The practitioners can file for notice of substantial implementation and SAA can get out of business rescue. But more importantly, at that point, the company will have a positive bank balance. It would be able to make good on its commitments as they fall due. On the issue of the roadmap, Honorable Hadeb, I think what I was saying as far as the roadmap is concerned was that we have over the last few days together with the department agreed on putting a roadmap and we're working together to put that roadmap and that roadmap will exactly do what you intimated, putting very specific timelines, including who does what, and so we will be doing that. And our commitment was that we will meet on a weekly basis and then we will be able then to measure the progress. Regarding the reports of the business rescue plan, we have an obligation to provide, in terms of the law, to provide monthly reports for a business rescue that exceeds beyond the 3 months, and we have been filing the reports with the CIPC on a regular basis, and all those reports are available on the website for the SAA business rescue so that they are accessible to all affected persons. The issue of apologies. Honorable Maud raised the issue of the issue of cancellation of aircraft. As I've mentioned, all the aircraft leases have been cancelled. And as far as the cost going forward, on the issue of the care and maintenance, what is the plan? I think the important thing about the care and maintenance, as we've indicated in the slide, we seek to preserve the airline's membership with the various bodies. We seek to preserve the infrastructure and systems of the airline, and in order and I forgot the third element, or preserving the company assets. So in order for us to do that, recognizing that we have depleted the funds, what on the back and the basis that we have an allocation, which allocation includes an amount for the unflown ticket liability, there are ring fence funds that we had at the beginning of the rescue relating to unflown ticket liability, which we have decided to reprioritize and use some of those funds to achieve these three objectives. Because what we want to avoid is a situation where at a point at which the funds flow for the restart of the airline has collapsed. So it is that fine balancing act that we had to do as the business social practitioners. And as part of that, we are hoping that we will be able to, with the assistance that we've received from the Department and National Treasury, we'll be able to get some interim bridge funding in order to fund and continue with the airline. Honorable Kachalia, I do take your point around the assumptions, and I would like to indicate to the meeting that the issue around the assumptions that have been made in the business rescue plan and the level of detail that certain of the affected persons had required of us has been a contentious issue for a while. We as business rescue practitioners seeking to make sure that we protect the interest of SAA in this competitive space, we have been reluctant to provide certain of the critical assumptions which have a bearing on the competitiveness of SAA. Members will recall that a competitor to SAA had taken SAA to court, and the issue of us not putting in the business rescue plan certain of the assumptions was raised, and we provided that defense even in the High Court that it would be to the disadvantage of SAA if we were to put all of those assumptions for all its competitors to access, and therefore by the time the airline restarts, it would be in a significantly negative position from a competitive point of view. So I would ask for indulgence from the members that we do not put those critical assumptions that have got a bearing on the ability of SAA being competitive once it restarts its operations. Honorable Chair Hlengwa, I take the issue of the BRP costs as has been raised by various members. And my commitment is that we provide the information through the department tomorrow. An issue is that, and I think it was pointed out in the last meeting we had with SCOPA, it is not just the charge out rate of the individual BRPs. The BRPs have got teams, the teams that do various things. In addition to the team, there's various levels of advisors that are involved in order to assist with the risk and making sure that we achieve the things that we are meant to achieve. Because it is important that notwithstanding the moratorium around litigation, we have been subjected to litigation from various quarters, notwithstanding the moratorium on paying of creditors. We have had to negotiate significantly with various critical creditors for them to continue providing services to SAA and keep the airline operating and keep the airline system in place, notwithstanding the fact that we have not had the funding to pay them. And all of those things, we need expert advice to augment what is in the BRP teams. And if Honorable Chairpersons and members, you could indulge us, let us provide a comprehensive detail of the BRP, of the business rescue cost in full in a document. So that we don't run, I don't at least run the risk of misleading this joint meeting. Finally, Honourable Chabalal, the critical issue around the dependency on the fiscus going forward, the manner in which we believe it is addressed in the business rescue plan is one, the creation of a stronger balance sheet through the compromise of the debt and its writing off. Two, at the beginning of the business rescue plan, a lot of work was done around the routes that the airline is flying, and that analysis focused on what routes are loss-making, what aircraft is, whether or not we've got the appropriate aircraft fleet to support those routes, whether or not we've got the appropriate overheads in terms of the people in the airline. So the revision of headcount, the revision of terms and conditions, it creates a far leaner airline going forward. And we believe that together with some of the processes that have been introduced during the business rescue plan around how we manage cash, processes around how we evaluate quotations from various suppliers in order to make sure that we have value for money, how we stretch the cash available in order to make sure that the airline is not simply paying on an ongoing basis without actually managing its cash flow. All of those with the right management will ensure that this goal is achieved. But again, a critical issue is that once all of this has been done, it becomes absolutely critical that the management team is committed in doing these things. On the issue of exorbitant salaries, as I've already mentioned, that there is a revision of terms and conditions and a significant reduction in salaries. The issue of employees who have worked for a long time for SAA, I think we need to look at that issue together or in context of a liquidation too. Currently, and through the LCF process, all employees who have taken voluntary severance packages would be paid their voluntary severance packages, and those that remain and get retrenched would be paid retrenchment packages, which is quite significant relative to a situation where the airline to be liquidated without these packages being agreed to and negotiated with various trade unions, because in that instance, employees would only have been entitled to 32,000 rand per month. The issue I'm reminded of the subsidiaries, Honourable Liz, the subsidiaries, they are subsidiaries of SAA, but the ultimate shareholder is government. And so to the extent that there is funding available for being made available by government, SAA is merely, in my view, a conduit to ensure that funding gets to the subsidiaries. I will hand over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Dongwana. Chair, with your consent, I think there were one or two issues raised with the Treasury DG, if you'd like to come in now.
Minister?
Treasury Director General, I'm not sure if he's still with us. There were some questions addressed to him.
Okay, is he here?
Okay, it might be distracted.
Did you?
But look, let me I'm just going to check with Mr. Makobe, our legal counsel in the department, whether he would like to add any clarity on any of the issues raised, and then I will round up.
Minister, just to say that the severance packages are paid by the employer, in this case SAA, but the employees, as like any other unemployed employees, will then claim their money from UIF based on their contributions. But the severance packages on retrenchments are paid by SAA. I think that's the only issue, Minister.
Thank you. So, Chair, I will both respond and round up, and let me thank Mr. Dongwana for his comprehensive responses. In respect of Honorable Mente's question around, let's call it more generally, controls in respect of the 10.5 billion rands, I did mention in my introductory remarks that we will put special controls in place, both with ourselves and the Treasury and others involved, if need be, because there should be, as all of us would agree, proper oversight over how every single cent is spent and to what purpose it is actually assigned, including, as Honourable Mente said, for the purposes of operations and the workers. Then, in relation to SAS, which both Honourable Mente and Honourable Lees raised, we have explained to the committee before that SA Express has followed a different path, where a private sector company initially applied to business rescue. Thereafter, that business rescue practitioner went back to court and placed SAX in liquidation. And the current position is that the liquidator has been able to obtain several extensions from the court in order to ensure that those who have expressed an interest in purchasing SAX would be actually able to do so. And they've been granted yet another extension in that particular regard. In respect of the workers at SA Express, I've expressed this, said this publicly, that it's a great pity that they had to suffer the consequences of the liquidation process, firstly, but secondly, the department did assist in making representations to the Department of Labor and Employment in order that the COVID TERS benefits would be paid to the workers at SAX, and some of that also applied to SAA workers. So some relief was provided in that regard. And we are still exploring the possibility of whether the learning or training and learnership scheme that we are putting in place as part of the social plan could include some of the employees from SAX as well. But given the climate that we have at the moment in terms of the limitations on flights and were people willing to travel and load factors, clearly there are serious limitations that we will face over the next year or two. Then a number of questions that Mr. Lees has raised have been addressed, but let me respond to some of the others. The ethos question has been raised, but to the best of my knowledge, that didn't go in any further than the approaches and discussions between particularly Mr. Matteson and Ethos itself. I've addressed the SA Express situation. So they didn't go through a normal business rescue process, nor was there money available from government at that point in time to undertake the exercise we undertook within SAA itself. But we will continue to monitor the situation there, and if opportunities arise to assist workers in that environment, we will certainly do so. Mr. Dongwana has explained that in selecting people for the new airline, some of that responsibility will lie with the new board and management, and some eventually would lie with the new partner that we enter, SAA enters into a relationship with, and that would apply to pilots and cabin crew and so on. And I think the nature of aeroplanes or aircraft that are required, as Mr. Dongwana pointed out, the kind of routes that we want to travel, and the kind of experience that pilots, for example, are going to be required to possess, will all be taken into account. But what will not be taken into account is the kind of regulatory agreement that SAA pilots have been using as an entitlement since the late 1980s with amendments in the 1990s, because that is an unaffordable situation going into the future. And what is clearly going to be required is an appropriate blend in terms of experience. Some who have 20 years of flying experience, others that have 10 years of flying experience, depending on the aircraft that they actually require to plan. But it is also important that both racial demographics and gender demographics be represented, both within the cabin crew, pilots on the one hand, and in other staff on the other hand as well. So those will be factors, including the new conditions of employment, that will have to be taken into account, because the costs of a future airline have to be managed in a way in which the viability of that airline is not affected in a negative way. As the Honorable Slengwa pointed out, one of the lessons that clearly we have to learn is how to, and I'll return to this point in my concluding part of my responses, that SOEs cannot be in a situation where their cost structures overwhelm and are greater than the revenue that they are able to generate for themselves. There must be, as we restructure these entities and undertake the structural reforms that we need to undertake amongst the SOE community, there must be a situation where their cost and revenue factors are balanced, operational efficiency is at its maximum, and that then improves the financial stability of an entity. But also, as we are doing, as I said earlier on, in the case of Eskom at this point, and that will go beyond Eskom soon as well, where market changes have occurred, the entity must also be able to undertake changes to its business model. Then I think Honorable Lee's, the point that Mr. Makobe made needs to be taken into account about what can be claimed from the UIF and what cannot be claimed. And if need be, we'll give you, if we are requested, a written response in that regard as to what the UIF caters for and does not cater for. But you don't get a double payment of retrenchment costs or benefits from all of these entities that are concerned at this point in time. How are the issue of actual losses in the future, which is an issue that Honorable Lees and Honorable Kachalia have brought to the fore? Remember what we said that the, and Mr. Dongwana pointed to this as well, that part of the business plan model was worked out at a particular stage on a basis of particular commercial considerations and assumptions. And we want to ensure that the new airline with its new partner is not starting on a basis that is unaffordable, nor can it start on the basis that it is going to be in any way dependent upon the fiscal. So I think the public needs to be reassured. They are hopefully not going to be any, I want to remove the word hopefully. We are aiming for a solution that will ensure that there is no dependence on the fiscus as we get in, across the restructuring line into the new airline and its operations. I think Mr. Dongwana has attempted to clarify the issues around liquidation, but clearly from what I've said before as well, in liquidation, employees are worse off. All the assets are completely lost. Those who want to bid for those assets from whatever sector have the advantage of doing what is commercially called cherry picking. In other words, you take the best that is available for the lowest possible cost and then utilize those assets for building or enhancing whatever business you're actually involved in. And the whole purpose here, as I pointed out earlier on, is to create a value proposition in the restructured SAA, which makes it an attractive proposition for a partner to combine with. There is continuous use of the word bailouts in the wrong context. I thought we clarified the concept earlier on amongst us, so we want to again assure the public that this is not a bailout. This is not about the old SAA with the old crooks in SAA, with the old corruption in SAA, with the old capture phenomenon, as Honorable Strangwa pointed out, in SAA, continuing with bailouts and abusing that money. This is very specific uses in respect of the 10.5 allocation and some further allocation over the next 2 years to cover the costs that Mr. Dongwana has actually pointed out. And I think there must be absolute clarity that there is a clear purpose for the 10.5 billion rands, which is to undertake the restructuring of this airline in a business rescue context, in order that what emerges, as has been pointed out by the business rescue practitioner, is a viable entity into the future, and our addition to that is a viable entity that has a competent partner to combine its efforts with. And Honorable Malinga raises the issue as well, that there's support for what government is actually doing in relation to SAA, and also repeats the point about the benefits of liquidation, or the, rather the non-benefits of liquidation and the benefits of restructuring, which is absolutely important, because in the confusion that has been created in the public mind through one kind of narrative or the other, it's regrettable that there is a common belief among some people, not all of them, because there are others who understand the difference between liquidation and restructuring, that this is, again, wasted money that is not going to have any benefit at the end of this particular process. So as Honorable Malinga points out, there are critical benefits of undertaking restructuring, which the legal provisions of the business rescue process provide for. And those benefits include, and let me repeat what I said earlier on, that we are able to preserve the presence and competition within the aviation sector and ensure that for trade and tourism purposes and connectivity purposes, South Africa, as an end of hemisphere destination, is able to connect itself to the rest of the continent and to crucial parts and markets, both for tourism and trade elsewhere in the world. Secondly, it is able to keep its commitment to labor. Thirdly, it is able to fulfill the obligations under the business rescue plan. And thirdly, it is able to ensure that there is competition, not only provided by the private sector, but eventually by the telecom look-alike that will be the new SAA that we are actually talking about. And importantly, as I pointed out earlier on, there's a wider aviation industry, an aeronautical industry that is dependent upon AXA as an airports company, and the old SAA, if you like, and the kind of dominance that it enjoyed in the market at that particular point in time. But the presence of a new airline in the restructured form, together with an effective partner, will have flow-through benefits and a positive domino effect across all of these sectors as we go forward. Honorable Hadebe has made the point about milestones in the plan. Mr. Dongwana has given his response, but clearly we want to repeat that we will work as a department with the business rescue practitioners to map out that particular roadmap and the obligations that everybody has. And sooner than later, we would like the business rescue process to end, so that whatever costs are incurred from a particular point onwards are for the benefit of a viable airline eventually and a viable partner in this process. Honorable Mautwe raises the question of conditions around 10.5. I've addressed that earlier on, and we want to make it again absolutely clear that the 10.5 must be spent diligently and has to be properly audited in order to ensure that actually occurs. In respect of Honorable Kachalia's point, I think Mr. Dongwana has raised important issues around the assumptions that he asks for or the scenarios. But what the business rescue plan does have is the inverted comma Seabury plan, which was developed at a particular point in time. And I think that like any business and any airline anywhere in the world, as conditions have changed, and depending on what they are at a particular point in time, that flight plan, if you want to call it that, has to be amended in an appropriate way in order to take best advantage of the new conditions. If there are positive ones and if there are negative ones, then clearly those have to be taken account of as we go forward as well. So as we make changes and when we get to that particular point, we will certainly keep Parliament informed in that particular regard. The business rescue process also, of course, gives us the opportunity to, as Mr. Dongwana pointed out, to renegotiate contracts, which include the leases as well. And the important point here is that there's now an abundance of aircraft in the world, lots of them parked off in different places across the globe, and the much better deals can be obtained now compared to the kind of commitments that were made in the past by the SAA management. On Honorable Shabalala's point in relation to the costs, we hope that the business rescue practitioner sooner rather than later will provide the details. We'd like to see them as well and ensure that those funds that were obtained, both in respect of the 5.5 billion rands in post-commencement finance, but also we must be transparent that there was revenue generated from the repatriation flights. And that was an important role that SAA played at a critical time for this country and indeed for the globe, when South Africans were stuck all over the world. And South Africa had the capacity to, there's only two or three countries in the on the continent that have that capacity to go to both the East and the West, collect South Africans from wherever they were and bring them back to their homes safely and back to their families. And secondly, the Solidarity Fund, which the business sector has established, which plays an important role in mobilizing money in order to assist with the supply of all sorts of goods and services, in particular personal protective equipment at the height of the pandemic, also was committed to using SAA and did use SAA, and all of that generated funds. So how those funds were deployed should be part of what the business rescue practitioners actually account for when they send you the written statement. In relation to Honorable Schlengwa, where did the money come from? Currently, the money comes from the adjustments to allocations to various parts of government. But there are other options that are being explored at the moment. But that's a matter that we are in discussions with the Treasury. If and when we reach some finality, we will make that known. But the more important point that Honorable Schlengwa makes is to understand the root causes of the collapses at various SOEs and the lessons that we can all learn from the Zondo Commission that should be avoided in the future. And that is why my view is that we must have, learning from that experience, the right level of controls within each entity, a diligent and professional and courageous board, because it does take courage to do the right things in SOEs, which impact upon and tread the toes of those who've been stealing from SOEs, then there'll be all sorts of negative consequences for individuals at a board level. And we've seen many examples of that in the last year or so and beyond as well. But it takes courage, it takes integrity, and as a society, we must address openly the issue of greed. It seems, as I've said before publicly, stealing a few million rands is not good enough any longer. There have to be a couple of more zeros attached to that 1 million before people have satisfied their particular greed. The role of the shareholder is also one where there has to be greater diligence. We understand that, and that's the capability that we need to develop as far as we are concerned as the DPE, but other departments that are involved with SOEs as well. Perhaps a thought that SCOPA should look at, but other committees in Parliament as well. There was an interesting precedent set in 2017 when the Parliamentary Committee or Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises interrogated the situation in Eskom. I don't see any reason, unless it can be explained to me, why SCOPA cannot call culprits who might have been responsible for some of this damage in SAA, whether they are in SAA now or not, to come and publicly account as they are accounting before the Zondo Commission in respect of the damage that they've caused and the malfeasance they might have been involved in over the past years. So that's for SCOPA and the other committees to consider. In conclusion, let me say, Chair and Chairs and Honourable Members, that government is absolutely committed to ensure that SOEs have a different kind of future from their past, and you'll hear a lot more about this in the coming weeks, in addition to the work that has already been done by my colleagues in various departments across government, including what you can see transparently in Eskom and elsewhere. But as I said earlier on, it's hard work to get an SOE back to some level of stability and eventually to become a dynamic particular entity. Government understands the limitations and possibilities that come with the business rescue process and is willing to support the restructuring process and the process of obtaining the right kind of partner for SAA as we get into 2021. Structural reforms is again something that the President has committed to as part of the reconstruction and recovery plan. And part of that structural reform, as far as SOEs is concerned, is not only the internal ones, but one which affects the fiscus. And so a lot of attention is being given to the question of removing the dependence on the fiscus by what we generally call SOEs or entities as well. And for effective stability, financially speaking, in these SOEs, as I pointed out earlier on, Chair, there has to be the right balance between the cost structure and the commercial revenue that is actually generated by these entities as well. Those who argue that, for example, liquidation is a better option have to think about two things in particular. There are many others as well. But the two is, one, if we can leave people with some additional money in addition to the 32,000 rands per individual in their pockets as they leave the jobs at SAA or in future other entities as well, as opposed to the 32,000 rands under liquidation, what is wrong with actually doing that? Whilst understanding that there are many workers in other enterprises that are in difficulty and government is providing different kinds of support to them as well. But the second, to say to the loyal customers of SAA who booked tickets, as Mr. Dongwana explained, and there, I'm sure many thousands of them, and who have paid for those tickets, to say, sorry, that's money that you're actually going to lose, whereas we've got to find some way of compensating them for those losses, apart from the obligations that we have to IATA, I think is food for some thought. We cannot say to customers and loyal ones of SAA who hold all sorts of Voyager mile benefits that you are not going to benefit at all as a result of buying a ticket, paying for it, and not being able to fly at a particular point in time. And we are trying to embrace as many of these considerations, Chair, as we can possibly do. So finally, this is not a bailout. This is a restructuring process, which is a legal process under the Companies Act, as Mr. Hadebe so eloquently pointed out. It's a commitment that requires us to complete this process with the minimal amount of cost and making sure that the 10.5 billion rands and the additional amounts that are required for the lessors in particular over the next 2 years is actually a commitment that we can actually meet. But we want South Africans to understand and honorable members to understand that our ultimate aim is to remove the burden of the old SAA from our shoulders collectively and from the fiscus in particular, and to emerge with a partnering process which allows the new airline to have a different kind of life into the future. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. And because now time is almost 10, and it will be unfair to beyond this time. This meeting was supposed to end at 9 o'clock, and therefore I won't even waste by diluting everything said here. But the reality of the situation is that the committees do appreciate the process that we are engaged in. And there are, of course, concerns that have been raised, which, of course, will be monitored as the process through our oversight, as the process continue. And we hope that we are also concerned about the workers from SAA who haven't received their money, who are not even sure about their future. Then this process, if it's going to be able to take into consideration their interest, therefore, who are we to prevent that process? Therefore, this community, therefore, and with that tone, that we support this process and will look and continue doing oversight until it will reach its logical conclusion. Therefore, I would like to call it a night and this officially attend. Thank you.
Long live the chair.
Long live the chair. Hello, baby Tabalala.
Hello,
how are you, my love?
Baby.
You look cute.